Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, joining you mere days before the start of free agency. Get excited, Bucks fans, as the Wild Wild West is about to become officially wild, even though in the NBA everyone kind of knows what's going on beforehand, but it's not officially official until June 30th hits. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast, but the star of the show is on the other line, Matt Velasquez, the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, we're not going to have any tears on this podcast like after Giannis's speech, are we? Because that was a little emotional for everybody.
Yeah, definitely emotional. I mean, it would have been emotional, at least, you know, at least for me, if it was any player getting up there, you know, and talking with that type of heartfelt emotion and all that stuff. Like, it's going to get a little dusty. And then, you know, to have it be someone, you know, like Giannis, who came from the background that he came from, someone who, you know, by nature of the job, I see, you know, more regularly than other NBA players. You know, it's not that I'm necessarily rooting for him. I did vote for him, but I wasn't necessarily rooting for him. But when you see somebody in that situation reacting that way, I mean, that it's just special. And I think we all, you know, were treated to, you know, just a really great moment for him. And it was just, you know, kind of fun to share it.
Yeah, Monday night was a really big night for the Milwaukee Bucks at the NBA Awards ceremony. Of course, Giannis named MVP, as everyone expected. Mike Budenholzer named Coach of the Year. John Horst named Executive of the Year. And we will talk about kind of what happened before the draft and free agency a little bit as well. But we'll start here with the awards. I don't think anybody was surprised to see Giannis win. I was surprised to see it be as emotional as it was. I mean, I had tears in my eyes. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And I know a lot of people did. I know we've talked about this before. I know it's not a secret, but I don't think we fully appreciate what it is to be an 19-year-old kid to come to a new country and to become the best player in the NBA, or at least one of the best players in the span of 5 years, to redevelop your body, to be emotionally savvy enough to do what Giannis did this year. I mean, I equate it to baseball. When you get 18-year-old kids drafted or kids that come out of the Dominican Republic, which is fairly common, it takes 7-8 years for them to even get to the point where you could say they might make a major league roster. I mean, there's a massive transition process that they undergo. They don't come to the United States right away. And if their kid's drafted out of high school, nobody's expecting to see them even in the big leagues for another 6-7 years, let alone a star, which is what Giannis was able to accomplish in 5. I mean, as you look at the story, what does this kid have that enabled him to do that? That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you said it very well there. I mean, it is incredible. And he, you know, has kind of put together all the hard work that he's done. He's just been incredibly hungry the whole time that he's been in the league. And even before that, I mean, his whole life has kind of built him for this. Like, the way that he is mentally, like, you know, he clings to his family. He's very tight with them. And they all feed off each other. They grow from each other and they draw inspiration from each other. And they also work really hard together. They push each other. And that's something that, you know, he sees himself as a leader and within his family. And obviously that's transitioned to becoming a leader on the Milwaukee Bucks, where, you know, he's constantly, since the time that he got to Milwaukee, has been doing, you know, tons of work, tons of extra work, just really pushing himself and striving to be the best. And, you know, when he sets goals, you know, he said the other night that he's someone who always tries to meet those goals. And so, you know, MVP being a goal of his, you know, he wanted to get there. He wanted to be able to win enough games to put himself in that conversation, because he knows that it's, you know, in many ways a team award, where, you know, if you're a really great player on a terrible team, you're just not gonna get the votes. And so he wanted to get his team better. He wanted to get himself better. And obviously the next step for him is that he said he wants a championship, which, you know, is a logical next step.
There was some salty, some sour grapes from the Houston Rockets organization, who tweeted out their disagreement with it. James Harden was obviously the other primary candidate for this award, and James Harden had a sensational year. We talked a lot about him during the course of the season. There was a point where I thought, you know what, I love Giannis. I hope the Bucks do really well, but I just don't think anyone but James Harden is going to win the award. It ended up not being close in the voting. Giannis kind of won, not by a landslide, but very convincingly. Do you think there's any validity to the idea that James Harden could have also been MVP this year? I know that's we're talking about narratives a little bit. The stats were certainly there for Harden. Do you think there's anybody, any reason you could say James Harden probably should have gotten more consideration for this award?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he put together a historic season. There were some issues with the Rockets at the start, which some of them were Harden's own creation or the team's own creation. But just the way that he put the team on his back with all the injuries that they had, with all the, kind of fluctuations that they had on their roster. And the only way they could win was if he was, a supernova. And there were many, many nights in which he was. And just the efficiency at which he scored and the way that he's changed the game, with his ability to get to the free throw line, his step back threes, just the proficiency at which he does all the things he does so well. He's a very worthy MVP candidate. I mean, I thought long and hard on, at least on my ballot, as to what to do with it. And eventually I went with Giannis. I just thought that Giannis was incredibly efficient on offense in different ways than James Harden, but efficient nonetheless, but he also, was able to be a high-level defensive player, somebody who finished second defensive player of the year voting. And so I thought that put him over the top and that, he was the best player on the best team. And that factors in. But no doubt about it. If James Harden had been named the MVP on Monday night, I don't think it would have been some, major miscarriage of justice. I know Bucks fans might not want to hear me say that. But I think if it had happened, I would have said, well, I voted for Giannis, but, I get it. And that's kind of just where it is.
No other player besides those two received a first or second place vote. It was definitely one of those two. And the voting system doesn't allow for really a co-MVP, but I like you said, I don't think it would have been a crime to see both of those guys get acknowledged in some way. James Harden, of course, won the MVP last year and will certainly be a candidate going forward. It is incredible how he carried that team. With the number of injuries the Rockets had, James Harden really had to even step up more than he did last year at times. So, like we said, Budenholzer Coach of the Year, John Horst Executive of the Year. It's a regular season award, and I think if the playoffs had been part of the equation, I think you'd have to say that Masai Ujiri with the Raptors, his move to get Kawhi Leonard, was at the very least the roster move of the year, if not grounds for Executive of the Year. But we talked about all the great things John Horst did to put this architecture in place, including hiring Mike Budenholzer a little over a year ago. It was a move that really sort of transformed what the Bucks were doing on the floor. Either one of those awards surprise you, or did you feel like it was pretty comfortable, particularly for Budenholzer down the stretch? You thought the award was pretty much his to lose.
Yeah, no, I thought that Mike Budenholzer getting Coach of the Year was pretty clear. Obviously, those other coaches were great in their own rights, Doc Rivers and Mike Malone. They had really good seasons with their teams in different ways. But I just thought that the huge jump that the Bucks made, I think their 16 wins were the second biggest jump in the NBA behind the Orlando Magic year over year. And just the way that it was very obvious that the scheme change and the way that Budenholzer maximized the Bucks' talent was, just totally different than the previous coaching staff. And that's the effect that coaching can have. Sometimes people wonder if you just got a huge, bunch of talent, anybody can coach, those guys. Anybody can tell, I know Steve Kerr gets some flack. It's anybody can coach four All-Stars. But there is an important element to coaching. There is that preparation, dealing with the different, individual, mentalities and personalities of a team and getting everyone to mesh, getting everybody to buy in, work together. And also, as Bud did, putting in a scheme and getting people to buy into it, saying, hey, this is the way you need to be playing, not the way you used to be playing. And so there's definitely a value to it. And I think just everything that he was able to do with this team and do it so quickly, too. I mean, he just, arrived. This first started practicing all together less than a year ago. And so it was really impressive, and I wasn't too surprised by that. I was, a little bit surprised by John Horst being named Executive of the Year, only because, like you mentioned, I think Masai Ujiri probably didn't get enough votes during the regular season. I don't know who does the, I mean, I don't know exactly what the breakdown of the voting was in terms of, you know, how everybody shook out. It is voted on by the league's executives. So I do know that John Horst beat Tim Connolly of the Denver Nuggets by 3 points. And so I know each of the votes, but I don't know what the mentality is of each voter. I don't know what the criteria is that they go based on. So maybe Masai Ujiri should have gotten some more consideration for the way that he changed that team around, was able to make the move to get Kawhi Leonard, to get Marc Gasol, you know, all those things that eventually allowed the Raptors to become the champions of the league. And I'm sure if the voting was redone during the playoffs or after the playoffs, I think Masai would have won it. But at the same time, John Horst did, you know, have an exceptional year in terms of his roster moves, from getting Mike Budenholzer to bring in Brook Lopez on probably the league's best contract, you know, getting Ersan Ilyasova and Pat Connaughton as complimentary pieces and free agency, doing stuff around the fringes with the Washington Wizards to pick up a couple extra extra second round picks that eventually were flipped into Nikola Mirotic, a move that at this point doesn't look as great, but at the time in February was, you know, roundly praised and considered to be, a massive swing by the Bucks to try and get to the finals. And, you know, they could be a mere slump away from having gotten to the finals and maybe winning the championship. But, you know, players go through slumps, players go through rough times. And hindsight being 2020, it wasn't the greatest move. And maybe the Bucks gave up too many future assets to get Mirotic, and maybe hindered their ability to do stuff in the future, move contracts, whatever. But at the time, it was a win now move that, you know, I don't remember there being anybody saying, oh, this is a terrible move, why would the Bucks do that? I think that it was a quality move. And so it was a good process. He had a good process throughout the whole year. And in building this Bucks team that won 60 games, I think he, you know, very much deserved consideration and eventually the award for Executive of the Year.
Hard to match the 12 months that John Horst had. Like you said, you mentioned some of those moves. And even though nobody had a maneuver like the Raptors did getting Kawhi Leonard, John Horst seemingly pushed all the right buttons along the way, Budenholzer being one of them, the move to get Lopez, like you said, Ersan, Pat Connaughton, all those were just, everything worked out to some degree. Even the Mirotic move, you could argue, worked out to some degree in that Thon Maker wasn't going to have the impact that Mirotic ultimately did. The real trick for John Horst is what comes next, because the Bucks are tight against the cap. They don't have a lot of maneuverability when it comes to the guys they can sign from outside the organization. Many people believe, us included, that they're probably going to address their roster by re-signing the guys that are already free agents from within. But it's hard to really know what's going to happen here starting on June 30th. We'll start with the thing that has already transpired, the NBA draft and the deal the Bucks made before the draft to send Tony Snell to the Detroit Pistons along with the first round pick. That pick ultimately ended up in the hands of Cleveland. John Luehr coming back to the Bucks the other way. This was in a surprising move. We kind of talked about how that first round pick wasn't serving the Bucks. It was also, you know, a cap hold they maybe didn't want to deal with, in addition to not really having the roster space. But to see this trade, I guess, what were some of your thoughts to stem from it? And do you think John Luehr is going to have any role with the Milwaukee Bucks going forward?
I first saw the trade and I was like, what? Huh? Like, this is it? Is this it? Can this be it? Because it just wasn't that exciting of a trade. You know, I know that the Bucks have been looking for flexibility and trying to move around some players and get themselves more cap space and all that type of stuff. And Tony Snell was one of those players who I think, as I've mentioned on past podcasts, you know, as of right now, he was slated to have the third highest salary on the team next season. And so obviously, you know, his impact is not, you know, at the level of someone with that salary. I mean, he was really good, really solid in the regular season, you know, shot about 40% from three, came off the bench and started a few times, played in every game he could up until he got injured late in the season. But the problem was that he got hurt. And then when he came back, he didn't really play in the playoffs. He was a non-factor. The Bucks had other guys who were able to do more things than Snell was able to do. And he fell out of the rotation. And so if you have somebody who's on your books for 2 years and basically $24 million, who isn't part of your playoff rotation in the biggest games, I mean, that's an issue. And so moving off his contract wasn't going to be easy. Yes, he is a serviceable NBA player, but getting teams or another team to commit to 2 years with him at that price was going to be tough. You know, I get that. And I'm sure John Horst and company did a lot of calling around the league, a lot of figuring out what they could get. And, you know, they decided that that was the best move for them. I don't know if it actually was. I don't know what the offers were. I don't know if that was the time to do it. But, you know, that's what they decided. And so I kept waiting and waiting and waiting to figure out, like, okay, is this going to be like the Mirotić trade or the George Hill trade where, you know, we thought it was one thing and then give it a little bit of time and something else happens. And that just never happened. It was literally just Tony Snell and the 30th pick for John Lohr. And John Lohr, you know, I guess he's kind of a stretchy big. You know, he's had a couple seasons where he shot the three ball well, not really at a high volume. And over the past few seasons, he's been hurt and hasn't really provided much great shooting. You know, his defense is and he couldn't really play for the Pistons this year. He barely got on the court during the playoffs. Just wasn't somebody who impacted the game. And so I questioned, you know, once that finally happened, it's like, okay, like, you opened up a little bit of cap room for this year. John Lohr is still making $9.5 million. He is on an expiring contract, which is more movable than Tony Snell's 2 years. So, you know, that could be the goal of the Bucks, is to get a more movable contract to eventually move. Not that it had to happen in the same deal, but, you know, it just doesn't look as great for the Bucks when the Pistons go ahead, go, and, you know, turn around and take that 30th pick and flip it for like four future second round picks. So, you know, now the Bucks are out, you know, Tony Snell, who's a serviceable player, they didn't get to make that 30th pick, and that 30th pick just turned into four second round picks. And, you know, and the question is, could that 30th pick, you know, could the Bucks have just traded it for four second round picks themselves and then use those second round picks as sweetener for something else? I mean, maybe. That's definitely possible. I mean, they would, and maybe nothing would come to fruition until after free agency had started, in which case they'd have all those future assets, but they would still have Tony Snell on the books, and they would have more, you know, more money on their cap sheet, and maybe that would not allow them, or make it so they would not be allowed to do some of the moves that are coming next. So I think we need to wait a little bit. I mean, as of right now, I don't think this was a great trade, but the interesting thing will be what comes of it. Yeah, you know, I don't know that John Lohr necessarily fits with the Bucks. You know, if I had to guess, I would say he probably doesn't even play for them at any point this season. That he'll probably get moved or waived and stretched or something like that before the season starts. You know, but he could be like this year's Jason Smith, where he's there and he plays mop-up minutes for a little bit, and then he gets included as a salary in a bigger deal. So, you know, I think that, like I said, I don't think this is a great deal. I understand why they did it, you know, to get a little extra cap space, because they want to bring back, you know, guys like Brook Lopez. And they need to have room to do that. But, you know, we're going to have to see what other moves this trade makes possible before we can fully judge exactly, you know, what was going on here.
Yeah, we'll talk about maybe some of the other things that could be possible as a result of the slight increase in cap flexibility there. But real quick, though, I want to get your take on the system in general, the way it's set up, because we saw that we knew that 30th pick was going to be in the hands of Cleveland by draft night, yet Kevin Porter Jr. walks across the stage with a Bucks hat on. The Bucks still had to physically, technically make that pick before trading it. Certainly it's not exclusive to the Bucks. It was happening all night long. The guys are walking across the stage with hats for teams that they were never going to play for. It's been this way for a while. You kind of see some pushback this year because maybe there was a pretty wide volume of guys that were just, you know, already traded before they even heard their names drafted. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the way the system is set up? Is there anything they can do to alter the way this goes down? And free agency in general, there's so many things we know already about what's going to happen when June 30th hits, and it feels ridiculous. It feels like a deadline that is, I don't know, it just seems like there's not really a race when everybody knows where they're going to finish by the time the bell goes off. So what do you think about how it's set up?
Well, in terms of the draft, I mean, I don't know exactly what the best solution is, because I understand how, like, you know, trades need to go through the league office. They need to be able to document everything, you know, confirm that it, you know, abides by the CBA and all the rules that are in place. And that can take some time. But at the same time, it's super confusing to follow the draft. As someone who didn't have any picks to cover that night, I spent a lot of time just watching the draft as it was. And, you know, kind of just as a general audience member. And you have no idea who's going where. Like, if you're a fan of a team and you don't have Twitter open and you aren't, like, actively following, like, who's doing what trade, you are massively confused probably all the time. Like, you have no idea, you know, if your favorite team, you know, you see them draft somebody and you don't necessarily know in real time that, oh, yeah, that guy was definitely – he was already traded, like, 2 minutes ago. Like, you just don't know. And so, like, you can be all excited about this. And then, you know, the person gets over to the interview with Maria Taylor. And she's like, oh, yeah, by the way, and you're going to be going to this place. And if you're a fan, you're like, what? Like, I haven't been following. I've just been watching TV. Like what's going on? So, you know, that is annoying. You know, unless they just want to give all of them generic NBA hats or just get rid of the hats and allow them to, like, you know, grab a hat. After the fact, I have no idea. But it's, I hope that people with a higher pay grade than me are trying to figure this out, because there's got to be a better way to do this experience for, you know, for fans, you know, because, and I get it. Like, if these trades are happening all the time, real time, like, you can't have graphics ready. You can't have things, you know, prepared. Like, you can only cut to Woj so many times, you know, cause I'm sure half the time he's, like, buried in his phone. It's, you know, it's just tough, and I get why people are frustrated watching it. And it's also like 5.5 hours, which, you know, maybe they can split it over two nights. I've heard this brought up before, like, maybe the lottery is one night, or maybe, like, the first round is one night, and maybe you kind of just, like, give it some more time to breathe. I don't know, but there's got to be another way, because it's not working in its best form right now.
And it's not even about the hats. It's just that Milwaukee has to make the pick. And I think the heart of it is just free agency doesn't start until the draft is over, unlike in the NFL where it's reversed. And, you know, then you sort of, there's no hiding. There's no thinking, well, they're going to sign this guy and they're going to sign this guy, so they don't need a power forward. You know, like that in the NFL, it's like they did sign those guys, so it's a little bit more sensible. There's no way that you could see those things switched, could you? The draft would start after free agency.
Ooh, you know, I don't expect it, because of the way that they have summer league in early July. Like, so you have a certain order you need to do it. And, like, you can't do free agency until after the playoffs are done. And the window is just so tight. Like the finals could have ended on June 16th this year, and the draft was the 20th. So, like, they're picking up pretty quick. And, like, you can't start free agency then, and then you'd have to shift some. There's just so many things you'd have to move that I find it unlikely that free agency would come before the draft. I think the only thing you can do is maybe move the draft up, but I don't know if there's really an incentive to do that either.
Free agency, though, is about to kick off, as we've mentioned already here, and the Bucks have some decisions to make. We've discussed that. We talked about it a lot on the last podcast, what we thought was going to happen with guys like Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon. There have been some reports since we last chatted that Malcolm Brogdon, or I should say Chris Middleton, is prepared to sign back with the Bucks on a near max. I've heard near max. I've heard max deal, 4 years, 5 years. We've heard a couple different things. And then Malcolm Brogdon is going to be courted by possibly the Bulls with a big time $20 million offer, which would hamstring the Bucks' budget if they decided to do it. But it seems like they would do it, that they would bring him back at that cost. Of what you've heard so far, what do you trust? What feels right? And what maybe are you a little skeptical of still?
Well, I think the stuff with Middleton, Brogdon, I mean, the Bucks are pretty straightforward. At least, you know, that's what the projections are in terms of free agency. The goal is just to retain their talent. And if you got to pay for it and go into luxury tax, like, that's what you do. This is the window. This is the time. Because, you know, with the way that their cap holds are and the players they want to bring back, they don't have the room to do it. You know, if you say, okay, don't bring back Chris Middleton, but you still want to bring back Brook Lopez, like, great, bring back Brook Lopez, but you still don't have, you know, all that much money in terms of, you know, room under the cap to sign somebody. So you're going to be you're going to be stuck. And so, I mean, there are worse places to be than stuck, you know, with Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton and Malcolm Brogdon, you know, and having to pay or overpay them. You know, that it's not like you're re-signing a bunch of schmoes. Like you're getting guys who have proven themselves as guys who fit into one of the best five-man starting lineups in the league last year. You know, you can definitely roll with that. The Bucks, like I said earlier, like, you know, they were a Nikola Mirotic shooting slump, or if you want to call it a, you know, Giannis rough performance in game three, or a Chris Middleton shooting slump, or an Eric Bledsoe, I don't know what just happened to you, series against the Raptors. Like any of those one things flips, and the Bucks could potentially have taken the Eastern Conference Finals from the Toronto Raptors. I mean, it's all possible, and that's the thing that'll probably eat at them the most this offseason, was how close they were. So this team that they have, and if they can bring it back together, like they do have the capability of going back out next year and repeating what they did this year in terms of regular season success, at least, you know, getting close to or you know, repeating it and being one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference, and then getting into the playoffs and seeing where the chips may fall. So, you know, I think it's pretty cut and dried for them. I think it would make sense, you know, because of the market, to bring Chris Middleton back at a max or a near max, because you can't replace him with anyone else, really, especially if you want to bring back Brooke Lopez. And then Malcolm Brogdon, I mean, you're not going to, you know, if some team is going to offer him $20 million a year, that is the market saying this is how much this player is worth. And I think that even if you re-signed him to that, you know, he wouldn't be an immovable contract in the future. You can trade a guy, especially if he's playing well, you know, on a $20 million contract. That's not overbearing. It's going to get crazy next summer, or actually 2 years from now, if they can sign Giannis' Supermax deal that would kick in not next season, but the one after. So he'll play two seasons on his current contract. So he'll play 19-20 and 2021, and then starting in 21-22, if he's on the Supermax, then the you know, the cap figure is going to be really high for him, and they're going to have to really figure out what to do money wise. But that's generally going to be a good problem to have, right? That means you still have Giannis, and you're going to have him for five more years, and you have to figure out exactly what to do. So, you know, all of those are future problems. All of those are, you know, basically someone else's money. So if you're a Bucks fan, you want them to field, or, you know, the best possible team. And unless they can make some kind of major trade or move things around in some kind of unforeseen way, I think the best way to do that is try and keep this thing together.
Some reports that Kemba Walker is going to possibly sign with the Boston Celtics. That would certainly be interesting, and we still don't know what the Celtics are going to do with a lot of their guys, although it seems like we probably won't see Kyrie back, won't see Al Horford back. I don't know. That seems to me that would keep Boston in that top tier of teams in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, Bucks fans are going to be really interested to see where Kawhi Leonard lands, if he comes back to Toronto or goes somewhere else, I think, for Bucks fans. The Western Conference is very lovely this time of year, and they would love to see Kawhi head over there. But if Kemba is back in Boston, do the Celtics again rise to the level where the Bucks have to be seriously concerned about them in the Eastern Conference?
If Kemba goes to Boston, I mean, they'd still be competitive. I mean, they had a roster where our esteemed colleague Ben Steele was joking that they were trying to win the Midwest Regional of the NCAA tournament. They just took a bunch of like really solid, like high performing, somewhat older college guys.
Yeah, Gordon Hayward's on that team after all.
Yeah, I mean, so like you have like the kind of that Brad Stevens, you know, coaching philosophy. I mean, he just likes to have like a bunch of like solid dudes who he can coach up and who will listen and he can do stuff with. And like, you know, those guys are all pretty good. But then you mix in, you know, you have Kemba Walker potentially, you know, with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward. And it's like, okay, like that's a team. Like, I don't know exactly, you know, what they'll be. I mean, Al Horford's a big piece, you know, who knows what happens with Marcus Morris this summer. There's still some holes to fill, but, you know, they have talent. But they would definitely, at least if you compare them to this past season's other teams, like they would be a top four, top five team still in the East, which makes them a team that if you're the Bucks, like, you know, you need to be, you know, you need to take seriously. And so it's just, you know, there's so many questions at this time of year. Teams are trying to do all kinds of things. You know, the Rockets are offering up all, you know, reportedly offering up basically everyone to try and maybe do a sign and trade and get Jimmy Butler. And, you know, who knows what Kevin Durant's going to do? He probably won't play next season, but is he going to go to, he's declining his option. So is he going to go elsewhere, sign a new deal with Golden State? You know, could he be in New York with the Knicks or the Nets? You know, what does all that mean for Kyrie Irving? You know, obviously, we have LeBron and AD out in LA, and who knows what kind of, you know, ensemble Rob Pelinka is going to put around them. You know, the Kawhi sweepstakes is a huge question mark and the thing that really probably holds all the keys to this whole summer. And here are the Bucks, you know, capped out, basically just bringing their own guys back, or, you know, have a couple guys along the fringes with an exception or sign minimum contracts. You know, they're kind of just hanging out, and that's not to say that's a bad thing. You know, sitting out in free agency, but having your haul still be, you know, potentially Chris Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, and Brooke Lopez. Like, just because they were Milwaukee Bucks before, you know, this summer doesn't necessarily mean those are bad moves. Right. If you were another team and you found out you got those guys, like, oh, you're like, okay, like, that's good. Like, we can work with that. So newer isn't always better. And newer isn't necessarily an option that the Bucks have, you know, in spades to go out and find lots of guys.
And we've talked in the past about why newer is more difficult when you factor in bird rights and other things, that the Bucks simply are better positioned, as all teams are, to sign their own guys. However, before I let you go, is now that you've seen some of the chips sort of start to fall, are there any names out there that jump to mind, or any types of guys that you think the Bucks would be interested in? We, you know, like you said, around the fringes, ring chasers, that sort of thing. But is there somebody that you've sort of paid attention to that you thought, man, that guy would look really good on the Bucks if they bring all their guys back?
Well, it's still so hard to know. I mean, we can go on a slight tangent here, but you know, so throughout this offseason, Giannis has just been tweeting emojis.
Yes, yeah, very weird.
With no context. Yeah. You and I have we've talked about this a little bit. Actually, on draft night, Giannis was in the building. He was in an area that we the media were not able to go, but he poked his head out at one point and he basically asked, like, everybody like my emojis? And just kind of like left it at that. Yeah, no, he's got his own you know, way of going about things, his own funny little you know, personality traits. Anyways, you know, the other night, so everybody's reading into all these emojis, because anything can happen. You know, emoji can mean anything. He did a puzzle piece. Could that be an allusion to Nikola Mirotic, who tweeted a puzzle piece last year? Or was he just literally doing a puzzle? Or who knows? Like, we're never going to know. Maybe we'll know at some point if he decides to explain, but I don't know if he will. But the other night, he tweeted, like, you know, a rose and then, like, a hands together, like, praying emoji. It's like, oh, like, that was the night of NBA awards. Like, maybe something related to that. Or maybe it just means Derrick Rose is coming to the Bucks.
D-Rose! Like,
and who knows? Derrick Rose is an unrestricted free agent. So, you know, I don't know. Does Derrick Rose just want to win at this point in his career and want to take a small contract to come play with the Bucks? A couple of years ago, they were interested in Derrick Rose and they went after him. And people said, oh, that's probably just a Jason Kidd thing. It's like, well, like, John Horst was around then. You know, so who knows? And this is just me stirring the pot, talking about Giannis emojis, projecting about Derrick Rose. I'm reporting nothing. I'm just having some fun.
Five years ago, we didn't even know what emoji was, and now it's a key piece to the NBA free agency period. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and like, you know, there's guys out there like that are going to get a ton of attention from other teams, and the Bucks just aren't going to be in on, right? Like, D'Angelo Russell, like, I don't think there's a path to the Bucks getting D'Angelo Russell. He's going to make too much money. Like, Nikola Vucevic, like would he fit with the Bucks? Like, I think so. Like, could he play like that Ersan Ilyasova role, minus a lot of charges?
Oh, man.
Like, sure. Like, you know, he was an all-star level player last year. Like, you know, he can shoot, he can stretch the court, all this stuff, but he's not going to be in the Bucks price range. like, unless they just, there's other people they don't bring back, like Brook Lopez. And I think that they would prefer to bring back Brook Lopez, considering all the things that they have said and all the things, you know, we've seen from him. Then you look at, you kind of just scroll down the list. Like, there are other guys like Thad Young, you know, may not be able to, the Pacers may not be able to sign Thad Young. You know, if they want to bring in like somebody like Ricky Rubio, to run point, in their system, you know, they did take, TJ Warren's contract, which he's a serviceable NBA player. If he on a draft night trade, so now that he's there, just like the money is kind of drying up, like, what is Thad Young's market going to be? Because I could see him definitely having a market, but where does he want to go? What does he want to do? How does he fit in with other teams? Like, can he get something, you know, that provides value for a team and also, like, you know, hooks him up with, you know, let's say around 10 or more million a year. What's his market going to be? We don't know. I mean, he's been in the league for a while, and I think that defensively, I think he fit in with the Bucks well, but, you know, there's not a great path to fitting him in. The one name that I've mentioned to you, I forgot to mention it on the last podcast. But like Anthony Tolliver seems like a Bucks guy. Like, just in terms of, he stretches the court, he knows what he's doing, he's a veteran, he plays, you know, solid defense. At least he's in the right spots, he knows what he needs to do. He can accept any role, come off the bench, and might be willing to come to a contending team on a smaller contract. Like, those are the kind of guys that the Bucks, you know, need to be looking at and trying to figure out how can they fit those guys into what they're doing and maximize, their success. Somebody like Dwayne Dedman is somebody that a lot of Bucks fans have talked about for a couple of years now, and he'll probably, you know, be one of the more sought after centers in the free agent market. But I don't know that he'll fit unless the Bucks have some kind of exception they can get him in, whether it's the mid-level or the taxpayer mid-level or the room exception, which is less than both of those. This is just a long way of me saying, like, there's a ton of guys out there, and the Bucks are going to have to, you know, really kind of work along the fringes to find the best possible talent, the best possible complements to what they already have, on a tight budget.
He is Matt Velasquez. You'll want to check out everything he's writing at jsonline.com. The Bucks free agency is about to get underway. June 30th is the big day, and Matt Velasquez is your best tour guide to all things Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for joining us, sir. We will chat with you again real soon.
All right. Who knows what the Bucks will look like then, but get excited.
Find us at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. Leave a rating and review. Find either one of us on Twitter. I'm at J.R. Radcliffe, J-R-R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. He is at Matt_Velasquez, V-E-L-A-Z-Q-U-E-Z. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will chat with you again next week.